Blog Talk Radio. Hi, folks, and welcome to Right from the Left Coast. My name is Linda. I'm your host today, and I'm broadcasting from beautiful Oceanside. We still have great weather. It's almost 90 degrees, and it's sunny and beautiful. This show is brought to us by PatriotFamilies.com. That is www.PatriotFamilies.com. And I want to welcome our guests in the chat room, 5078 and 5112. Not sure who they are, but that's great. And Ron, of course, Constitution Hour. And we are getting started today. Also, if you want to call in, the number is 646-378-0321. That's 646-378-0321. Wanted to start out with my experience of Monday, and that was my Vista Tea Party Patriots meeting in the city of Vista. And I was about 6 o'clock, and I had wound up my call in to Ron's show, and he was speaking to a man named Richard who wasn't quite understanding, but that was another story. It was entertaining. So what we had was a candidate's vetting situation in the city of Vista. Welcome, Mr. Magic. I noticed he joined us. And so we had two gentlemen from the city of San Marcos who were running for city council. And after they got to speak separately for 10 minutes each, the audience got to ask questions. Well, one of the gentlemen held up an illustration of this corridor that was proposed by the general plan. And it was, you know, something of a nightmare, and everybody's upset. Well, this Agenda 21 and the complete streets, et cetera. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show. Also, has been on the forefront of everyone's minds because people are now being educated about these code words. So I had directed my question to the first gentleman. His name was Mike. He's also running. And the gentleman, Sam, had shown the illustration. And my question to Mike and to Sam was, in view of this illustration that everybody's so upset about in San Marcos, what are your views on private property rights, and how would you reject Agenda 21 in your city? So he went on to explain he was aware of some of these terminology, Agenda 21. He was not as well versed, and Sam, but he did believe in private property rights. He said he's a diehard constitutionalist, and I said, okay. So then the other gentleman had mentioned that he was a little bit more versed in the Agenda 21, but again, not quite up to speed. The next group of people were running for City Council of Vista, and there were five of them, one lady and four gentlemen. So they all spoke, and at the end, I had raised my hand, and I didn't have a question, but I had a comment, and I explained to them, you know, how I had studied Agenda 21, and I said, if you, ladies and gentlemen, will give me your business cards with your email addresses, I would be happy to give you the links to information by two of the best explainers of Agenda 21 that I'm aware of. And I said, it's concise, it's perfect, it's very, very in-depth that you will need. So what was beautiful and what was kind of a nice surprise was at the end of this meeting, all seven of those people came to me with their cards and spoke with me. And I had explained that one of the links was Tom DeWeese, and Tom DeWeese has been studying Agenda 21 for 15 years. So he and Rosa Chiori on the other side, they're the best. They're the best in the business, and they will not, let you down. And also, when I did send this information the following day, I got two responses from two different candidates thanking me for these links. So I thought maybe, you know, if anybody will take the time to learn, then it's out there for them. I went to, hi, Jomer, welcome everybody. Again, 646-378-0321. About 8 months ago, we're going to have a little fun with the DNC and the RNC and all the rest of this nonsense. It's amazing what's going on. I used to make lists, and I just made a new one, of the congressmen and the senators that I consider to be statesmen. Well, it didn't take long for that list to go from 22 to down to 16. And on the 16, there are some that are quite questionable, as we will go and you'll see. Now, the moderate rhinos or whatever, there's 9 of them, so we can go into that list. But the ones that I thought were decent would be Marsha Blackburn, Tom McClintock, John Cornyn, Daryl Issa, Duncan Hunter, Jason Chaffetz, Connie Mack, Alan West, Louis Gohmert, Paul Brown, Ron Paul, of course, Steve King, Mike Lee, Justin Amish, Peter King, and Anne-Marie Burkle. Now, moderate ones, Brian Bilbray, Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Paul Ryan, Kelly Iote, Tom Coburn, Jim DeMint, Marco Rubio, and unbeknownst to me, but we don't know completely yet about Rand Paul, but Rand Paul was kind of on my, I'm not sure. So basically what was kind of weird with the, you know, the RNC, they had some good speakers, and then, of course, the DNC, the first speaker had to, I think he was a mayor or something, I don't know what his name was, but he was the one that was talking about that we're owned by our government. That was pretty crazy. The other thing that happened, they took God out of their platform, and people were upset about that. People were upset about not recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and so with a lot of blowback from their own constituents, they had to reinstate all of these platform things in their platform, and I'm sure against their will. But the comment about being, you know, that one thing we can identify America as and being American is being owned by a government, I don't think so. I think it's just ridiculous. Of course, then we had Michelle, you know, speaking last night with all of her lies and innuendos and, you know, just touting what a great husband she's got and how poor they were. Oh, yeah, right. I think the one thing we agreed on, and I'm going to hat tip to Glenn on this one, was that being president for the amount of time that he has doesn't change you, that he's the same person that he was when he went in. Oh, I'm pretty sure. He's still a Marxist. I'll give her that. That one I agree with. Now, some of the things that should have been said at the RNC, which were not, was probably the part that we all love on the Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There was no mention of the things of the founding, that we created this government. They are our employees. I think the only one mentioned it was Clint Eastwood. And it's time we start firing a whole lot of them. The other things that were not mentioned is part of Obama's record, and one of the things they could have hammered on was maybe a clip on a screen where he was saying that we need a national civilian army just as well funded, just as well stocked, just as well trained as our military. That would be one to start with. There, you know, no mention of course, then the DNC talks about, you know, this is a with all their lovely speakers. I'm going to go ahead and pick up, I think it looks like Robert, my friend Robert from Florida. Hi, Robert, how are you?
My friend Linda from California, how you do?
Hanging in there. You know, there's so that could be said and isn't said. Of course, tonight, DNC, Slick Willie, the poster child for the war on women, will be speaking. Should be interesting.
My impression of our gracious First Lady speech last night just didn't
she's amazing.
My impression was, you know how she said we all have to work hard.
Shared sacrifice one more time, I swear my hair will just explode. My eyes will bleed and my head will spin off into space. I can't take it. It's just, it's insanity. But I'm, you know, this DNC is one of the most vile, degenerate, bigoted, you know, conventions I've seen in modern history. I can't get over these people, but they are exposing themselves for who they are. It's,
well,
go ahead.
Did you hear what Schultz said about Israel today?
I missed that
one. Oh my Lord! I mean, she fried the whole thing. She fried the whole foreign policy of Obama against, you know, what Obama was doing for Israel, basically. And she just fried herself. It was a tape. She misspoke again on, you know, while it was recorded. She didn't realize she was on tape when she said it. She said something to the fact, and I'm trying to get it straight, and I don't want to misquote her what she said on the tape recorder, but she basically said, you know, she said it's dangerous for the Republicans to I don't know how she put it, but it went right over my head so quickly, and I'm trying to get it straight, but I don't want to mess this one up. I think she said it's dangerous for the Republicans of even trying to defend Israel, something about defending Israel, and it was about something about, and Obama's doing the right thing of how he's treating, you know, Israel. Am I right or wrong?
I'm just going to, Bill just typed it in. It says, it would be dangerous for Israel if the GOP wins, is basically what she said. So
exactly.
I didn't hear the speech because...
Oh, it was horrible. It blew me away. It blew me away. It just totally... She is so vile. She's just such a vile person.
Yeah, she's an angry... whatever, I'm not even going to say the word, but... I can't stand looking at her. I can't stand listening to her. She lies through her teeth. The woman is pathological. I can't. I will not waste my time on these people. The only reason that I heard Michelle was because I happened to have AM radio on, and they cut in from Mark Levin's show and played the whole thing. So as I was playing computer games, believe me, just to distract myself.
My Lord. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to digest all this stuff, and I'm tired of digesting it.
It's pretty crazy out there. I agree with you. You know, I've said it before. In fact, there's a piece, and if you guys, I don't have the link, but I have. I'm going to go over here and kind of look at this. This is called Mrs. Daily. It's M-I-S-E-S Daily. And this one's called, it's absolutely fabulous. And it was given to me by Ron, and hopefully he can put that link up there somehow. It's called The Economic Irrationality of the State, which embodies the ideals of statism, which is kind of an all-encompassing word for all the other isms, which I totally hate. This is one of the best, I'm not kidding, explanations of monetary policy, what the Fed does, and what all of the people such as Hitler, Mussolini, and Stalin, when they deal with taking over the means of production, and when the Fed takes over the entire control of the monetary output of money, et cetera, and also what Stalin did with collectivization, and it's just, you know, and Hitler did the same thing as Mussolini. He wanted total control of the means of production. They all use different methods, and of course, they all use guns, force, because it's never going to work. But if you guys can read this, go to Mrs. Daily and look for that, The Economic Irrationality of the State, when the state does their central planning, et cetera. And I'm reading Hayek's Road to Serfdom, and all this ties in together, and it's very well done. So this is something, and I know it's somewhat of a dry thing, but this one really made it interesting, and I'm trying to educate myself on this monetary policies and systems. throughout the world, so and throughout history. Because if we don't understand it, you know, if we don't learn it, I mean, my gosh, and this is one of the most important things. In fact, on Glenn's show the last 2 days, he was mentioning, he said, please go back to the website to find out what you folks need to do to prepare, because once Greece and the euro melts down, it's going to hit us like a tidal wave. And you are not going to be able to get your money out of the bank. You are not, you know, you're not going to be able to go pump gas. Your ATM machine may not work. You know, who knows what they're going to do. You just need to be prepared to the best of your ability, just like for any natural disaster. I mean, I wouldn't go as far as preparing for an EMP, because I don't even think anyone can prepare for that except God himself. But it's really. welcome to everybody that's in the chat room. I've got a lot of great listeners today. And I wanted to give you a kind of a really neat thing that I had heard on Mike Slater's show here locally. I'm not sure anything about the book or the name of the book, but a lady doctor had called in and she wrote this book about her near-death experience, but the name of the book was To Heaven and Back. And apparently they thought she was gone because she was hovering, you know, and she saw them working on her. And then when she went to heaven and talked about the love she felt, she says she's not worried about life's small problems anymore, because she knows God loves all of us profoundly, and he has a plan, and he has a purpose for all of us. And we are supposed to keep fulfilling our purpose while we are here on the earth. So it was really quite, you know, quite a nice uplifting thing to hear. I thought, yeah, I'll go for that. So again, our number is 646-378-0321. And how's things in Florida? And are they still bugging you about the smart meter? Are you still there, Robert? Can you hear me? Okay. I'm not getting Robert. Okay. There's Bill. Yeah, you guys go ahead and call in. So, the RNC missed many golden opportunities to talk a little bit more about the abysmal record of Obama. And again, we're not going to fault him entirely, because this has been going on for decades, and Bush was no angel by any stretch of the imagination. Most of these guys are puppeted by the elites, although they are carrying out the orders quite willingly, because they vie for that office. They get into that office and they don't do anything to combat the evils, because as we know, if you go up against the Fed and the elites and the Illuminati, you wind up dead like JFK did. So it's pretty disgusting. But they could have done a little bit more to shed a lot of light on all of the things that this president has done along the lines of Lincoln, along the lines of good old George and the rest of them with the Patriot Act, the NDAA, and all the rest of it. Now I'm going to pick up Ron so he can weigh in on all these craziness going on. Hello, how are you doing?
Hey, Miss Linda, how are you?
Fine, sir. Go ahead.
You know, I wasn't really calling in to comment on the DNC. You know me, I don't pay attention to the news much.
Right.
You know, Michael had called me Michael Magic, and we just got off the phone.
Okay.
Yeah, he was calling. He listened to the archives from Monday, and he was just beside himself. So,
oh, sure.
You know, I mean, the more I look at what's going on, and that's really what Michael and I were talking about, there's a lot of very well-meaning people out here, okay?
Right.
And I experienced it firsthand when I joined Patriot Families.
Sure.
And I hope that more people will begin to really examine what it is they truly believe, and how their belief actually squares up with constitutional government. Okay?
Correct.
Because there's a lot of people out there that consider themselves to be conservative or Republican, or Republican conservative, that
right.
simply... I hate to say it, they simply are not conservative. They may be conservative. Wow, that is some really bad feedback. Is your mic real close to your computer?
Okay, let me turn down my speakers just a bit. Okay, go ahead.
But there are a lot of so-called conservatives out there who are only conservative in light of someone like an FDR, and clearly not anything even approaching a Calvin Coolidge.
Yes.
And they they don't understand. And it's not something that they've done out of some kind of intent.
Sure.
It's that we've gone so long within this system of progressive liberal ideology.
Exactly.
That what we're witnessing unfold in our government on Capitol Hill is two sides of the same liberal progressive coin fighting for control. And they may differ slightly. They have a difference of opinion on maybe small specific issues, but it's only that, just a small difference.
Sure.
And in reality, it's just all the same bunch of liberal ideology that is failing and has failed and will fail again.
Of course. Now, that piece that you put up for me, and I talked about it today from Mrs. Daly, I am going to go ahead and print that one out and make copies, and I'm going to hand it to these candidates whom I have been walking precincts for and phone banking for, and by the time this campaign's over, they're going to wish they never met me, because I'm not going to stop till they get it. I'm about private property rights. This is sacrosanct. If you understand everything that the founders went through, everything that they talked about, there have been many people, John Adams, George Washington, and the list goes on and on about how they felt about private property rights. I mean, it was even mentioned in that article. So we have that clear choice. You have to understand the Constitution. You have to understand just about every dang book I've read in the last 4 years, or you're not going to understand who you are and why we're here and what the Declaration means and what God wants for us. You cannot separate it. And this is our choice. You either want what they envision for us, the good ones, not Hamilton per se, but the others, or you don't. Or you want that big government that they're talking about at the DNC and total absolute totalitarianism, because there's no, it's going to devolve to it. You know it's going to go to despotism. They've talked about this for centuries. You know, so I don't see, and the sheeple brainwashed Obama bots, they're never going to get it. A brick wall could fall on, they're not going to get it. So I don't care if you could put them in a gulag, as long as you feed them, they're happy. it's amazing to me. It's hard for me to understand it, and I know it's because I'm fallible, and I guess I expect the Vulcan mind meld to work with these people, and it won't. So that's why my head explodes.
Well, and I read something that that is absolutely amazing that Coolidge wrote in one of his speeches, and it was absolutely amazing to me because he put it so well. And it's one of those things that a lot of folks would like to get rid of. It was something that I heard thrown at Ron Paul several times, and that was that, Ron Paul wanted to take us back to the horse and buggy and back to the days of slavery. And Coolidge had written spoke against the progressives. He said in a speech at Independence Hall, and he said, that the progressives want to get away from the idea of individual rights. Okay.
Sure.
And he said, you can't do that. They consider this progress. He says, if all men are created equal, that's final. If they are endowed with unalienable rights, that's final. If governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, that is final. No advance, no progress can be made beyond these propositions. If anyone wishes to deny their truth or their soundness, The only direction in which he can proceed historically is not forward, but backward, toward the time when there was no equality, no rights of the individual, no rule
right.
of the people.
Well, yeah, because it would take you back to the divine right of kings. I mean, how
exactly.
else could it be?
Exactly.
Right.
That was exactly his point.
And what people don't, what they fail to realize, I believe, is that, yes, we've had great technological advances, but that is the only thing that has changed. You do
right.
not change human nature. I don't care. And the founders knew that. My Lord, they knew that. Probably better than anybody, you know, except Christ himself.
Absolutely. And they knew, Jefferson knew, the founders knew how dangerous it was for the role of a president to become elevated to the point that it has today, where the
right.
people see the president as the fixer of all things. I have droned on my programs
right.
about this very specific issue. All we hear, if you turn on the television today, if you watch the RNC, all
mm-hmm.
you hear from Barack Obama and Mitt Romney is what they're going to do to fix what's broken. And what no one seems to recognize
right.
is that what's broken is they keep trying to fix things.
Exactly. This is the thing. Why are people... It's like... This is like Babylon and Pharaoh.
Yes.
Either or. They are always looking up to... Instead of looking to the eye... Keeping their eyes on the Lord and looking at your own divine right by Him to look to yourself. He gave us everything we need, you know. And then these sheeple, this is the entitlement mentality we have devolved into, and that's what they're doing. They really believe that this, and that's the problem, because that's when you get into, they're going to fix it. Oh no, I would much rather go by what Reagan said. When they say that I'm from the government and I'm here to help, run.
Right.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing. That we never ask the question. We never ask the question. The government says, oh, I'm here from the government. I'm here to help. Help what? We don't need your help, you know?
Yeah.
But no one's going to, out of their own mind, say, no, I don't want that, when the government's standing there with a check to give to them. And, you know, it really doesn't matter. And I see there's a, you know, conversation going on in the chat about Israel. I have a great deal of respect for my brothers and sisters out there that are Christians. You know, we're all in the same boat together. But as Christians, you know, we can go down with the ship proclaiming our love for Israel. And it does us no good, and it does Israel no good. You know,
right.
aside from the philosophical debate over whether or not the modern nation state of Israel is the Israel of the Bible, all that aside.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, everybody's making, you're right, they're making such a big deal about this. And if you go to the Jeffersonian idea or the Ron Paulian idea that, you know, keep to our own situation here. In fact, George Washington several times said, you know, these alliances with foreign entities is a no-no as much as possible. You know, friends to many, you know, and you keep out of our business and we'll keep out of yours. I have that in some of my books. So
absolutely. And you know, the idea of staying out of entangling alliances was just as sound an idea in 1789
uh-huh.
as it is today. The problem
Absolutely.
Is, okay, that no one has thought to sit back and say, okay, let's take stock of exactly what we have. We have been living under the expansionary growth of government under
right.
the liberal progressive ideology since at least 1913 and Woodrow Wilson, okay?
Easily.
And I don't care if you're carrying the torch for Ronald Reagan or not, okay? One supposed staunch conservative out of the whole group, from him forward. I mean, you could put Coolidge in there. We could look at a few others, but in all honesty, I think Coolidge was really the last of
right.
the true conservatives.
Right.
That is, someone who acceded to the idea of the Constitution and not this liberal progressivism that was brought about by Wilson. So we've lived in this ideology. We have given and given and given. We have allowed the government to expand and expand and be so benevolent and try to take care of everyone. And we see the problem with this now. I hope that Americans are beginning to see the problem that, you know, instead of throwing a drowning man a life preserver,
sure.
we jumped in the water and tried to swim out to save him, and he's drowning us.
And we have no water wings.
It doesn't work. It's a failure. Yes, sir.
Do you know anything about the Constitution Party, number one? And do you know about this guy from Virginia who's supposedly going to run as an independent by the name of, his last name is either G-O-O-D, dude, or he supposedly is on the ballot on 50 states for the Constitution Party of the United States. Do you know anything about this guy?
I do not. I don't know much about the Constitution Party, I'm sorry to say. And, you know, quite honestly, I've said it before and I'll say it again, guys, and I'm not trying to have a defeatist attitude here, but we crossed our Rubicon a long time ago. Now, my good buddy Mike Church down in Louisiana, who does a show on Sirius Satellite Radio, he doesn't see it that way. And I understand his take on it. Said you got $16 trillion in debt. You cut $1 trillion. You know, we took in $2.7 trillion in revenue.
Unbelievable.
So you pay $1 trillion. So you pay $1 trillion a year towards the debt. And the $1.7 trillion that's left over is what Congress gets to spend to run the government. And that's it. That's all great. That's all great in principle, but at this point, you know, I think we all feel some kind of obligation to all those people that have paid into the system and have been promised something. I don't know the solution to that. I think he's right. That is the credible solution, but is it one that would ever occur? You would have a civil war in this country.
We're getting close to that anyway.
I agree.
You know, let's put it this way. If I were given a true choice, and I mean a true choice, where there was a Federal Reserve and all this nonsense with what they're doing, and they pared it all back, and they went ahead and phased it out as whatever time they could with the Social Security and the Medicare, I would trade all whatever they give me right now for a really cool paying job. And can you imagine if we had an honest system, how great this country could have been and could be? My God, I could make so much money, it'd make my Social Security check look like a, you know.
Well, you know that article that you were talking about that I emailed you from the Von Mises Institute, I did take issue with one thing that the author said, and I sent him a note about that, because even though I understood the light in which he was saying it, and that his statement was that the 16th Amendment to the Constitution authorized a direct tax, and I took issue with that because that's factually inaccurate.
Okay.
As those terms are defined by the Supreme Court, but I understand what he means. In principle and in application,
right,
it absolutely authorized a direct tax without apportionment. But again, for the sake of clarity, I told him I thought, you know, in this, for the sake of not being held out as misleading, you should put some kind of disclaimer on that so that people understand. what you're actually talking about. But it,
okay,
it's
so,
truly, you know, go ahead.
So if we were to, I don't even know if it's possible at this point without a total revolution, but if you were to take steps, like, you know, and you were in charge, so to speak, to get it to where the founders really wanted it, the good ones, what would you do first? And then after that, kind of tick it off in a timeline. What could you
do? I think the very first thing I would do would be to, if I was in charge, would be to pick up the phone and get in touch with Ron Paul.
Well, yeah.
And there's several other influential minds that come to mind in the economic arena, but I would want to surround myself with good, solid people, and there aren't that many of them out there. There are a few. Peter Schiff is another one. He understands it. He gets it. There are a few economists out there, more than a few, that get
mm-hmm.
it. But it would have to be more than simply economic. But I think right now, the single most fundamental thing that we have to face is the economic reality that we are in big, big
trouble.
And, you know, no amount of pretty speeches and whitewash is going to change the reality that's going to hit this country, whether it's this year, next year,
right.
8 years
well, you
from
know-
now. I don't know that we can go 8 years from now. The
oh,
idea
no.
of the idea of electing a Romney, okay, and, you know, I was just reading an article, automaker sales are up, except for GM. They're up 4%. Everybody else is up double digits. And they honestly believe that that's an indicator that the economy's on the increase, and I don't think so. I know better because my wife's business, she is the general manager of two Harley-Davidson dealerships. Her business has been going gangbusters ever since the economy flopped. And
wow.
It's kind of an oddity. But then again, it's not an oddity because people are saying, you know what, to hell with everybody else. I've got mine. I'm going to go buy me a new Harley. I'm going to go buy me a new truck. And the rest of the world can starve. I don't care. And they've been pushed into that corner.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, you and I kind of, we know what's coming because we pay attention. When you look at the euro situation, and once that domino effect goes and we get hit next, why in God's name isn't Romney talking about this, Paul Ryan talking about this, Marco Rubio talking about this, and for the love of good Lord, the media, the traitors that they are not doing any service to the American people. I'm not suggesting that they scare the bejesus out of them and make them go do a run on the banks, but at least prepare.
Well,
you know
my boss asked me this question, I shouldn't even call him my boss, but you know, he went to college, he got a degree in economics and business management, all right?
Right.
And when he met me, he didn't know anything about economics at all. He knew nothing. I mean, you know, and here's a guy with a degree and graduated top of his class, and I told him, so as I'm explaining things, and he's listening because he understands the terminology and things, and so one day he asked me, he said, how is it that, you know, I don't know any of this, and I've got a degree in economics. I took 4 years of economics and so on and so forth. And I told him, I said, well, and I grabbed a box.
Right.
I said, you see this box here? This is the monetary system that we have currently in the United States. And you want to learn how to be a businessman and be an economist within the framework of this box. So they put you in the box, and they tell you all you need to know about how it works.
Uh-huh.
But, you see, at this point, you've got such a limited view of economics and truly how an economy actually functions that you can't see anything outside of that box. That's your whole world.
Sure.
And that's Mitt Romney. That's Barack Obama. That's Jimmy Carter. That's Ronald Reagan. That's
right.
Every single president that has come down the line since 1913. That's what makes Ron Paul such a standout from all the rest. That's
I
what
know.
Draws the ire of many people against him, aside from their misunderstanding. You know, that's something that I was telling Richard when he was on the phone on Monday.
Right.
The problem is, it's not that Ron Paul is defective, okay? It's not that his policies or his ideas are defective. What's defective is the person listening and not comprehending what the man is saying. He might as well be speaking Swahili. Because to all the people that have been confined within this little box, and it's their whole world,
right.
They don't understand the truth. The truth outside of their box doesn't work inside their box.
No, yeah, when
you take the truth and try to put it in the box, they all freak out.
Right. This is what I call a cloistered mind. They cannot or will not, or maybe they're just trained from birth to be this way, so that they cannot have that openness to even grasp. Again, I'm an advocate for people reading books because that will open up a plethora
absolutely.
Of things.
Absolutely, Linda. But you look, I mean, I'm 47 years old, okay? And I was in that box. I was Ronald Reagan and rah, 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 and my country, right or wrong, and we'll kick everybody's butt. We got the biggest military. We can do whatever we want. I was one of those guys. And
sure.
as I got interested in history, and I got very interested in law, and as I started researching and reading,
right.
the more I read and the more I learned, the sicker I felt. I was
sure.
disgusted with who I was. I knew the person I was. And it ripped my heart out because everything that I thought I believed in was
exactly.
a total fabrication and a lie.
Yep. Yes. And I remember when you were bringing some of us along piece by piece, you know, little bit by little bit, and trying to spoon feed us, which you did, and you did a great job. There were nights I could not sleep after seeing what I saw. Thank you so much, sir. But anyway, no, I'm glad I know.
Yeah,
I got
and it's, you know, and all these people, I get people say, yeah, conspiracy theory. I get so pissed off when I hear that. And you know what? I mean, you can take all the conspiracy out of it. You can forget
right.
about, you don't even have to mention anything about a new world order, anything like that. You don't have to believe any of that. Just look
right.
at the facts, okay? You can believe that these people honestly and truly and sincerely believed in everything it was they were doing and thought they were doing it for all the right reasons. It doesn't change the fact that they were wrong then and they're just as wrong today. And what we're seeing today
right.
is the result of over 80 years of failed political ideology. It is a total failure. This
well,
is it, why it, our government was structured the way it was by the founders.
In the original, yes, argument. Now, what's happening, it's not just failed policies, it's bad policies to begin with, and it's central planning on every level. There's so many bureaucratic Lilliputians out there. Just look at those idiotic alphabet soup agencies that I just loathe. And these regulations, how do you have the rule of law when you don't even know what's coming down the pike?
Right.
It's,
if you know, people,
disgusting.
People talk
them.
About people talk about the shadow government. Okay.
Yep.
If you want to know where the shadow government is, the shadow government exists within the various agencies of the federal government. It is the bureaucratic heads that are able to legislate without having.
Yeah.
A vote to pass Congress or the Senate without having the president having to sign it into law, without having to be elected into office, without
right.
being answerable to anyone at all.
I know.
They are a government unto themselves. You know, and I haven't even gone in to research it yet, but I know that what I got yesterday, an email, I know that it is factually accurate. I talked previously about the fact that Title 26, the tax code, has
right.
never been enacted into what's called positive law. Many
okay.
of the regulations, many of the enforcement regulations for the tax law under Title 26 are actually found in Title 27, which is alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Oh, my gosh.
Which
yeah,
ought to tell you something, and let me tell you, hold on a minute, Robert. Title 27, the BATF, is also not positive law. What that means is the scope of the jurisdiction for Title 26 is in federal territories and insular possessions only. And so, too, is the BATF laws. It's only applicable to the 10-mile square and, territories and possessions like Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, and so on.
Ron, I have a question for you.
Yes, Ron.
Go ahead.
You know we have the Dems and the Republicans, right? So why is it that the Democrats regulate and the Republicans deregulate? I mean, I don't get it. Should it be the opposite?
But the whole idea, the Republicans and deregulating, let me tell you, that's nothing more than window dressing. It's smoke and mirrors. It's a game that's played by both sides of the political aisle. I've covered this before, Robert. Let's look at Newt Gingrich, all right? Oh, my goodness. Back when everybody was so excited, the several folks on Patriot Families was excited that Newt Gingrich was running. And I had to go out of my way to point out that Newt Gingrich is the biggest liberal progressive ever to walk into Washington, D.C., aside from perhaps Wilson. Now, let's go back to the Clinton administration, 1996. And you understand that we had this deal on the table called NAFTA.
Yes,
right.
Okay. In order for NAFTA to function as part of the United Nations program, as they wanted it to function, they had a problem. And the problem they had was banking laws. Okay? In the United States, there's two separate banking systems. There's a national banking system, which is the Federal Reserve System. That's why you have Wells Fargo is a national bank. But then you also have state banks. And state banks are not necessarily governed by the Federal Reserve System. They're governed by state banking laws. Here in the state of Georgia, we have our own state Department of Banking. Okay? And so they write the rules and regulations for state banks. And the state banks' rules and regulations were going to prove to be an obstacle for NAFTA, because in order to comply with NAFTA, we have to comply with international banking laws. And with state banks in the way, that could not happen. So we had to change some banking regulations in order to bring the state, to force the states into forcing the state banks into falling in line under international banking law. It's really just that simple.
Wow.
As a consequence of that, you had a housing bubble. And in the interim, between the time that NAFTA was passed and those banking regulations were changed, and we began to see the beginnings of the housing bubble, you had a whole litany of liberal progressive Democrats lining up, cheerleading, rah, 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 a chicken in every pot. Everyone should be able to own a home, and putting pressure on the Congress to even loosen the standards more, which brought you, of course, the housing bubble.
Great God.
And by the way, I will want to mention that when Bill Clinton took credit for balancing the budget and having a surplus, that was actually done under a Republican-controlled Congress, okay? And that balancing of the budget was nothing but smoke and mirrors. it's real easy to balance the budget. It doesn't take any effort at all. All you got to do is increase the amount of money you claim you're going to spend and then spend less than that. Now, granted, it is a feat for the government to appropriate itself a budget of, you know, $10 trillion and only spending $9.98 trillion. You know,
God.
That is a feat in and of itself, but it's all, it's sleight of hand and nothing more. And to brag about having a budget surplus while the checking account is overdrawn by $9 trillion is just disingenuous.
Yeah, so besides hiring economists, don't you...
Well,
don't
the other things I would do, and I got way off of the talking
track.
Top there and digressed. But no, the first thing you do is you bring in a team and tell them, look, here's the plan. Let's start getting this put together. How can we do it? And we've got to transition out of this garbage. And I think Ron Paul had it right. The very first thing I would do would be to urge Congress to repeal the legal tender laws. And by doing that, you allow competing currencies within the system immediately. The second thing I would do is to ask Congress to remove their peg of the dollar some specific valuation, because I see that as the fundamental problem. I don't care whether it's what kind of monetary system you want to impose.
Sure.
The minute you begin trying to set prices on anything, most importantly of all, you're never going to have any success at all. And then we have to be able to come to the American people and say, look, it's time for us to put aside all the BS and let's be perfectly honest. We're in trouble. And we can no longer afford to continue giving assistance to everyone. Government cannot just print money infinitum without causing a financial collapse, which is what we're facing.
Right.
So it's going to be tough.
It's not going to be easy. Yeah, could you, at that point, if you did those other items first, could you at that point just negate the charter, get rid of it, of the Federal Reserve?
I think honestly, would be, I think that would be a bad idea. There has to be a transition. And I think the best way, the one thing I would do is I would say, okay, you know, as far as exceeding company, the way they do all the stock exchanges and everything, I think that's okay. But here's the thing. No longer is that going to be covered by the government. This is going to have to be overseen by the market itself. And if you guys get burned by it, you know, it's not our problem. We're out of this deal entirely. The second thing I would do is I would want an accounting of all the various investment funds that the federal government has at every level. And I would have to tell the federal employees, past and present, sorry, guys, I hate to break the news to you, but there aren't going to be any pensions. Okay? we're going to take this money that's set aside in these pension funds to fund government pensions, and we're going to use that to fund the Social Security system. And we're going to give people the option of opting out of the system if they're 45 years of age or younger.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you're 58 or 62 and you want to opt out, hey, more power to you. I got no problem with that. But we don't want to just cut off and say, no, you can't join this system, because we have a moral obligation to those people, plain and simple. As much as I hate it, we do. It's there and we can't ignore it. And then slowly we begin to figure out a way to unwind this
mess,
morass that has been created. And it won't be painless and it won't be easy. And you know what? The free ride is over, folks.
I agree. I'm
back to reality.
And then what about now? I know your take on foreign policy, which is pretty much the Jeffersonian Ron Paul, and I've come to understand it as well. What about this miserable piece of garbage sitting in New York City, that UN building, and are. I mean,
well,
I would stop
as,
all
look,
money
as,
to those clowns.
That as president, I can't kick them out of the country. Okay. What I can do is tell them that there will not be another cent public money spent on any foreign aid, on any aid to any outside agency that includes the United Nations. You can fund
yep.
yourself if you'd like to. We will no longer be participating in the IMF, the World Bank, the World Quarter, any of that other garbage. I'm
yep.
sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but we simply as a country cannot afford it. The Constitution is not a suicide pact, and neither are these agreements and charters
right.
and treaties. They were never intended to be a suicide pact, not from my standpoint. So I'm sorry, but we're just not able to participate in that. Our law prohibits it. Period. End of
yeah.
conversation. And I don't care if you're Israel, Pakistan, or who the heck you are, you don't
exactly.
get 1 cent of the American people's money unless, out of the kindness of their own heart, they want
yeah.
to buck up and send you a check. And that's their, hey, that's fully within their rights.
Yep.
As I told
Absolutely.
Richard, if you want to defend the Syrian people or the Israeli people, brother, there is nothing stopping you from getting a doggone passport, getting on a plane, flying over there and saying, where do I sign up, guys? I want to be in the military, and I want to defend your people. There is nothing stopping you from doing
that's right. You know, this is what drives all of us nuts, because this is total the Marxist theory of that redistribution. They steal. I mean, they break that
yeah.
commandment every second. And
I don't care. Yeah. Idea of redistribution, I call it what it is. It's theft. They're stealing.
Oh, yeah.
American
oh, yeah.
people. And the only people, is it any surprise that the only people they want to steal from are the ones that are producing anything? Of course
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Let's shoot the golden goose, right? Oh,
right.
man.
Right. You got a hen laying eggs over there, and I'm going to rob it. And
yeah.
I'm going to wring its neck and cook it because I like me some fried chicken. Well, then you're going to wake up in the morning and say, boy, I sure wish I had some eggs.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on in this country. And
I know.
Both sides are guilty of it. And they sit there and they banter back and forth with this piddlywink BS. And
it is. And they're what it is a huge deception, Ron, to the American people. And the American people have been swallowing this for how long? Over 100 years?
It's not even a deception, Linda. Let's be honest. The American people are just flat lazy.
Well, true.
We're intellectually lazy. We're intellectually too damned lazy to get off our butts and get involved. Why? Well, we could use the argument that because I'm working 80 hours a week just to pay my daggum taxes, you know?
I know.
But I'm sorry, that's just a cop-out.
It's
all
your fault, Ron.
Yeah, whatever. I'm, you know, put it on my shoulders, brother. I don't care. It's, you know, I told the caller Monday night, you know.
It's all your fault.
He really ticked me off when he said, I want to thank you for paying my taxes. And, you know, if you're
yeah.
trying to be a wise guy, you know, that's not working. Sorry.
Who said that?
That Richard Griffith guy that ran for Congress
oh, yeah.
Monday. And, you know, this self-proclaimed conservative independent, he's so full of hot air he doesn't know which end it's coming out of first. He thinks, he honestly believes that he's some kind of conservative, and he doesn't have the first clue. Not a clue. And you know, this whole idea of, you know, I heard that Ron Paul's foreign policy was a policy of appeasement, but you can't give me an example. And I gave him an example, and what I would ask everyone listening is, why, ask yourself, why did none of the moderators at any of the debates for the Republican presidential candidate, why did they not pose this scenario? You're president. You've been in office for 1 week. Israel has been attacked by Iran. Congress has called an emergency session and made a declaration of war. What do you do? I'll tell you why they didn't ask that question in that way. Because the response they would have got from Ron Paul is, I pick up the phone to my military commanders and said, gentlemen, we're at war. The enemy is Iran. Give it everything you've got and destroy them. That,
right,
ladies and gentlemen, is not foreign policy of appeasement. But see, they would never ask that question because it would blow the curtain off of their charade.
Well, you know, Ron, I'm lost for words because, you know, we've been debating this issue for, God, only like 7 or 8 months now. And, you know, I don't know who to vote for. I don't even know if I want to vote.
I told you before, slaves vote. Figure it out, guys. You're a dog. If you're going out there trotting out just to give yourself peace of mind to vote for the lesser of two evils, Mitt Romney, whatever, I don't care who you're voting for, slaves vote. You had a chance. You had a chance to make your vote count during the primaries, and you failed. You voted for Gingrich or Santorum or one of these other idiots. You failed. Go do your due diligence. I understand that. But my point is, the only way out of this is for the American people to stand up and say, no, I'm not going along with it. Every time one of these people spouts a lie, throw it right back in their face and challenge them with the truth. And stop accepting mediocrity. Stop accepting this BS and give it right back to them and don't let them get away with it.
Yep. We are in archives. And I want to thank both of you for calling in. It was great because we talked about the monetary system, which is very, very important. And we know that it's coming and it's not going to be pretty. And given the situation we're in with this miserable, miserable fiat currency we deal with, it's going to be ugly. And that's why do you think they're putting those tanks on the street and ordering the ammo? So I tell you, we just got to pray, guys. We've got to prepare, pray, and do our thing. So thank you, Ron and Robert, and I'll see you guys in the Patriot Family Chat. Thank you and be blessed.
Has anybody heard Hollis?
Good night, hon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Is Hollis to be found?
Not yet.
All right.
Okay, guys.
He's in my prayers.
That was great. Thanks so much.
All right.
Good night, Robert. Love you guys.
Bye-bye.